Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When your entire life is online, you need more than just speed from your internet. Xfinity gives you reliable in-home Wi-Fi coverage, plus protection from Wi-Fi network threats. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a Scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
All right, it's Film Study with Ken McCusick. We're going to look back at the loss, 23-17. This weekend, you all know that. If you're listening to this and you don't know what happened, that's a issue, and you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast, but I don't want to turn anyone away. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
It's going all right. It's going all right considering how ugly that game was on Sunday, and we're going to get into it, and today will be a defensive look. But, I mean, we've got to just talk about the general fact of the season's over.
Yeah, you know, at the end of every year, you just don't get time to get used to the fact that your team is out. They're out. It's over very quickly,
I think I had time yesterday.
and you had time, but between about halftime or late in the first half, and then
Exactly. About halftime till about whatever, the final 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and they've had another chance again. Yeah. Okay. Well, not, you know, obviously not a good outcome, not the one we wanted. It kind of reminds me of two really terrible home playoff losses, and in fact, the only other two home playoff losses. The Ravens only played six of their 24 franchises playoff games at home. They're 3-3 in those games and 12-6 on the road. So their home losses to the Titans in 2003 and in 2006 each had big similarities to this. Start with the Titans game in 03. That was a year, of course, they had Jamal Lewis and rushed for 2066, and they had an offensive line that could do some good, decent blocking, and they really tried to run Lewis against the Titans defense, which was one of the best they'd faced, of course, the entire year. And the Titans shut Lewis down pretty quickly in that game. He had a lousy game, and the Ravens were not very quick about changing to the pass and giving the game to Anthony Wright, or at least, you know, balancing their attack to try and do some other things. They just pretty much stayed with the run with Jamal for a very long time in that game. And when they eventually did, they got it tied. They had a chance to win the game late, and unfortunately, they failed to convert a third and about four after McAllister had a big interception. Then they kicked the ball back. Orlando Brown had a 15-yard penalty. They drove down the field. They kicked a field. Anderson kicked a field goal that barely cleared the crossbar. Just a terrible loss at home. It was a kind of a slow death and slow failure of the running game that game. But the other one that I'm sure a lot more people remember, the 13-3 Ravens of 2006, who were very dominant defense,
Right.
60 sacks.
The divisional game.
The divisional game, yeah. They hosted the Colts after the Colts had to play on the road. The Ravens got the bye in the final week by beating Buffalo. And you know, they came here and basically they put the Ravens to the same sort of slow, torturous death, where the defense played very well and they held Manning to five field goals in that game. And Manning himself, I think, had a quarterback rating of about 30, if I recall correctly. A couple interceptions by Ed Reed in the game. And they still got five field goals, went up 15, you know, scored 15 points and won the game 15-6. The big play in that game was a interception thrown by McNair at the end of the half. And just in terms of missed opportunities, in terms of the five field goals, in terms of the defense, you know, holding up its part of the bargain, all reminded me of this lousy affair on Sunday.
Yeah, we were talking on Section 336 today about how much this game, it didn't remind us of previous games. It just seemed like the entire year was brought into one game, and this game just kind of represented how the Ravens' season as a whole went this year, with the coming in with big expectations and then kind of doing okay, but not really doing anything flashy to you think all right, everything's done, to some type of miracle at the end to give you hope, and then for the game to end on a fumble. Just seemed fitting.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's couldn't can't argue with that logic. That's very fitting analogies all the way.
All right, but we won't get into Lamar. We won't get into the offensive line. There might be a little mailbag with that, but for the most part, we'll save that for the next episode. Let's look at the defense. And the defense, especially seemed kind of early in this game, was holding their own and being set kind of with their backs against the wall. We're doing okay.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, I don't think there's anything you can say that's a very legitimate complaint about the defense. And I've got a couple things that we'll talk about as the show goes on. But basically speaking, the defense played very well. And I don't want to lose sight of that fact. They held the Chargers to 243 yards. That was their second lowest total of the season. And the only game where they were lower, guess what? That was Week 16 against the Ravens when they only had 198. 3.7 yards per defensive play. You win that ball game.
Right.
I mean, you do not lose that ball game, not very often. The Chargers, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, the Ravens did, as far as the defense did everything they needed to, and then probably a little extra to try to win the game.
They
just needed the offense to not blow it. But also, the Chargers came in with a different offense, where they weren't, didn't seem like they were going to rely on Phillip Rivers to throw the ball deep.
Yeah, they didn't have a bunch of deep passes. They only gave up one play of 20 yards or more in the entire game. That was for 28 yards. Jimmy Smith had kind of a tough day. We're going to talk about that a little later in terms of some of the way the defense maybe got a little tired out. But basically, they did a great job of forcing Rivers again to get rid of the ball pretty quickly. He did have a lot of completed passes. A lot of them were short of the sticks. Some of them on third down, in fact. And you know, these were cases where the Ravens did a good job containing him. I think one of the things Sam Fortier talked about when he was the guest on the Know Your Foe episode was that he thought they'd go swing passes a lot more to the running backs, and they tried some of that, very unsuccessful right. in this game, including some plays for loss, and a couple other plays for 3 yards where Rivers took a big hit each time. So those aren't the kind of trade-offs that I would be making if I was a Charger fan, even if one of those was a first down. You know, just not that exciting a trade-off. So I think their short passing game was particularly ineffective. They basically made do with outstanding field position and only had one really decent drive where they ended up sticking it in the end zone. And boy, did they have a lot of help to get it there. So we'll talk about that one at some point.
Right, we'll get to that. There not only help, it was later in the game where our defense had to be worn out. That's what surprised me, is I was waiting for our defense to just fall flat for being on the field all the time, because it seemed like every time the defense got off the field, they didn't get much of a break. And
no, that's true. A lot of three and outs for the Jackson offense until about 9 minutes left in the ball game. That's for sure.
Right. We're going to get into this, I'm sure, more on the offensive side, but how were the fans in this game? Because the fans really get fired up for third down.
Yeah.
And then they want to see that excitement offense come out, but then to have your defense out there every play, even when they're playing well, how's the fans react to all this?
I mean, I thought the fans in this game were absolutely fantastic. Obviously, there was some negativism when the offense was continuing to flag and not get anything done.
Right, there were some boos and some Flacco chants.
Yeah, there were some boos. There were some "We want Joe." But and by the way, you know, fans are going to be fans. So just you whether it's the right move or the wrong move, and we'll talk about that on the offensive episode. You know, that's another matter. But fans are allowed to express themselves. Obviously, we're the paying customers in terms of being able to say we want Joe or we want Lamar. And
the players make those salaries to be cheered and to be booed.
That's correct.
That's the reason you pay $400 to go to a playoff game.
That's right. And anything in entertainment is subject to fair comment, of course. And that's exactly what the fans are doing when they boo. So life goes on. Anyway,
it's also why people write comments and reviews about this podcast is to praise you and boo me.
Yeah. Or the other way around, believe me. All right. So the fans. I didn't want to make one more point. The fans, particularly when the Ravens were on defense on their last time they had to stop the Chargers on three downs to get the ball back with about a minute left, a little bit under.
Yeah.
It was the absolute loudest I've ever heard them at a game. Everybody was screaming. Everybody was on their feet. I've never heard it longer. I was in fear of my eardrums with the amount of noise that was being created. It was extraordinarily loud.
That's awesome.
And that includes indoor facilities, you know, Minnesota, some of the other really well-known, super loud indoor arenas.
Right.
I'm talking about the old Metrodome, really. And just never heard it that loud. In Jacksonville in 2000 is actually one of the last games I missed. Might have been the last game that I missed. Maureen was there. She said that was not as loud as that. So, sorry, it was louder yesterday.
Well, and that was definitely affecting Rivers in getting his play calling out. You saw that.
Yeah, he was having a lot of trouble trying to get people back to the huddle and whatnot. It was very trouble for him to check out of anything, it looked like, in the game. So fans were doing their part there. So anyway, I thought it was just outstanding in terms of how that went. Great playoff atmosphere. If you can't enjoy that about football, you are really, you know, destined for the couch for the rest of your life, because that's what was really fun. It's a beautiful day for you know, January football, so you couldn't have complained about that. And if you didn't like the way that the crowd was reacting to the game, then you had I don't understand you.
No, it looked like a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. So with all this defensive play, did we get overworked on the defense or hold it together?
Yeah, so the overall snap total is not so horrible that, you know, you would say that's too much. They gave up 66 defensive snaps, only had 59 themselves.
But that's because most of the time they were getting off quick again.
Yeah, they were getting off quick. And yeah, they were also getting the San Diego off the field fairly quickly most of the time.
Right.
So San Diego didn't have a bunch of long drives. But yeah, you're right. Most of the time it was because the offense was letting them down. And what I will say about it is this, that it's not necessarily that they played so many snaps. It's about how easy they've had it relatively in the recent weeks using the quote-unquote Jackson formula. So they've had these enormous snap count advantages, but it's not just been snap count advantages. It's been rotation at all three levels that we've talked about before,
right,
that has fueled a lot of the high energy defense they played that further gets them off the field quicker. And it's like a self-sustaining system. Your defense is getting off quicker because they're less tired, and your offense is able to stay on the field for longer because the defense on the other side is more tired and you're still just running the ball down their throat. So they couldn't continue that formula against San Diego in this game. Very upsetting that they couldn't, because San Diego playing a very undersized defensive unit, the Ravens still weren't able to push that around. We'll talk about that on the offensive show. But on the defense, I thought they were overworked at three levels, and each of them had its own special thing. We talked about the outside linebackers being overworked coming into this game. So we said, right, you know, that Suggs and Za'Darius Smith and Judon were playing more snaps than a lot of other positions where there was rotation. And that what made that worse was the fact that Za'Darius Smith has three-point stance snaps on the inside where he's playing, and those are higher energy snaps. He really disappeared as a pass rusher in this game. Suggs did not do much as a pass rusher in this game. Judon had a big game. And then they used Bowser for a fair number of snaps. He did a little bit, but he wasn't particularly great in this game either. So their outside linebackers really seemed the most overworked of any group, but they weren't the only ones to be overworked.
Right. Well, we went into this game, kind of the surprise inactive was Tavon Young in the secondary.
Right. Tavon Young, that was a big inactive, because he's one of the better slot corners in the league, and he had been dealing with this groin injury. Obviously, they felt they needed to have him take a week off, or the injury was at a point where he wasn't going to be as helpful. And for whatever, they weighed the consequences of having him not there or not, and they decided he wasn't ready to go. In any case, that left Smith, Carr, and Humphrey. Now, that's not the only way they could have gone, but it is the way they went. So they used Carr at slot corner with Smith and Humphrey on the outside, and those three guys played more than at any time in recent weeks. Even in the Kansas City game, they had rotation, which kept them at lower snap totals than they had on Sunday. But Carr played the slot exclusively, and Smith played all the snaps, which he hadn't done. That means you're playing all those snaps consecutively, which is more difficult. You can't break up a long drive by putting in a new cornerback. Now, it's not that they couldn't have. They had Anthony Averett. He's played very well in relief this year. They just decided not to use him. And so they went with those guys. Smith, who had a fantastic game last week with two picks, of course, and only one completion and seven passes thrown his way for 1 yard. Well, anyway, that did not go as well this week, and Smith was the one who Rivers threw over and threw in his area for the three longest passes of the days, which were 14, 17, and 28 yards. And those all went to Smith's side. Humphrey was outstanding. Carr was outstanding. No problems from those two, but Smith was the one that suffered a little bit in this game from heavier play, and that was, of course, due to Young's inactivity.
Gotcha. The Ravens, like you said, they keep doing the substitution thing, and that seemed to help them out, but they seemed to have trouble with it yesterday. They got called for 12 men on the field pretty early in the game.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I got one more thing I got to mention on the tiring defense, is that they activated only four defensive linemen again for the game. So Pierce was hurt on the very first play of Q3, and they've come out today and said hyperextended elbow, won't require surgery. Thank God. That would have been a really bad thing, obviously. But Pierce was lost for the rest of the game at that point, so they had to split the snaps. And it was in that third quarter, crossing over to Q4, and then the subsequent drive where they got a field goal, where the Chargers had their couple of sustained drives of the game where they actually drove down the field for a touchdown. We'll get into how assisted that was. And then also had that field goal drive after it that put their total up to 23 points. So obviously those 11 points were very big in the end, those 11 fourth quarter points the Chargers got. And if I had to point to anything, the defense being tired was probably the biggest factor in making that happen.
Gotcha. All right, so because they're tired, like I was saying, they've got the substitution issues kind of when they're trying to get people in. 12 men on the field with the Urban Carr situation. How did they get into this issue?
Okay, so that was early in the game, so it was a 3rd-and-1 play. And I forget what first quarter, second quarter, whenever it was. But they had a 3rd-and-1 play. They'd been effective stopping 3rd-and-1 and 3rd-and-2 in the game, which was good. But they went into this play. They rolled Urban onto the field And Carr would have been the player to come out. You bring out the slot corner in that situation. Right. But he didn't leave the field. Ravens had 12. That not only guaranteed they got the first down would be given because there's a penalty, it also gives a free play away to the offense. And fortunately, they just ran the ball for 2 yards, so the damage was only 5.
Right.
But it's still the kind of penalty you don't like to see. 12 on the field, 10 on the field. I've got a low tolerance for both of those. Championship defenses, defenses which know what they're doing, they don't run into this problem very often. So it happened a lot to the Ravens this year.
Right, and they almost had a few times in the game where they almost had only 10 on the field, that there was a late guy. Is that a communication issue?
Yeah, I mean, I have to blame the coaches at this point because it's happened so many times this year, and I'm trying to remember now if it's been 5 or 6 times, but it happened 4 times in the first 5 weeks. I want to say once since then, maybe week 14, 15, 16 in there, and then twice more in this game. So, I mean, that's an absurd number for one season. I mean, a couple of years ago, it happened 32 times league-wide, and the Arizona Cardinals had 16 of them. So an average NFL team has it happen once per year, and the Ravens have had it happen, you know, 6-7 times, whatever it is this season.
Right, and twice in a wild card game is not acceptable.
We have to really go over the span of 3 plays that occurred on that crossover drive because it's so important, right. And it was so critical. But they got to 2nd and 2, okay, at the 2nd and goal from the 2-yard line, I should have said. And that was the play. There was a long review involved in the play, but before that play, Za'Darius Smith ran off the field. He was the 11th defender, not the 12th, and that left the Ravens with 10 on the field to defend that play. And Za'Darius Smith, not sure exactly where he would have lined up in that formation, probably on one end since they have additional down linemen. But, right. But anyway, he was not there, and Board made the touchdown, a touch to make him down. That was ruled on review, did not cross the goal line. So right. they set the ball up there, and it's a bad play, but it's only one time. You hope at least they can recover from that. It's 3rd and 1. Maybe they get the stop. Well, the 3rd and 1 play, of course, was the one the review was the whole game was on that, basically. It was a question of it being a fumble. I don't think it was. I think it was correctly ruled exactly how it was. But a question of a fumble by Gordon that was just short of the goal line, rolled in the inside, picked up by Humphrey, run back all the way. So it was originally on the field called a touchdown, and I think it could have been called a touchdown the other way because I don't remember the whistle ever being blown by the referees or by the officials.
No, that's the one thing the officials did good is they let the whole thing play out.
Yes.
Where a lot of times you see that not play out.
Yeah. Do you think so they had 11 men on the field for that.
Right. So I know we're going to get – I haven't looked at the mailbag yet, but I'm sure there's a question in there about this play. So you said you think they got the ruling right. If Weddle didn't touch him, do you think it's a fumble? Or do you think it's a ground calls?
No. If Weddle didn't touch him, it's definitely a fumble because he's not down by contact. It's definitely a fumble.
Okay. Gotcha.
Weddle has to touch him to make it be down by contact. And then I think the question was he had his right hand over the ball, left hand under the ball,
right.
And it was a little bit loose in his hands, but there's nothing that would.
Right.
That
you saw it move, but not out of control.
That's right. That's right. So I think they made the right call in every respect to down the ball in the field of play, not a touchdown, not return for a
right.
touchdown. So it's one of these times you got to give the officials their credit for getting it right after a fair number of times that they've gotten it wrong over the years.
Especially a play like that where the whole game hinges on it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. 14-point turnaround. So anyway, that play took a long time to review, and then the next play, of course, was that 4th and 1 play.
Yep.
And Suggs was very late running on the field, visually remember that rule. So he was the last guy who got into a stance on that side. And, of course, they ran the play. Gordon ran right over him. Suggs didn't do such a bad job of trying to undercut his opponent, but they ran the play right over his side and scored the touchdown.
Right, it's 4th and inches. It's hard to stop to begin with.
Very, very hard to stop to begin with, and it probably is a little harder to stop when your defender's in late. But
yes.
It may have been a good headsy play for Suggs to get in, particularly if he wasn't the one who was supposed to be there.
Right, he might have just been on the sideline and saw there was a guy short and ran out there.
That's right. So that's certainly possible that that's the case. So anyway, great that he got in. Bad that they weren't organized enough to have him in early, but at least they had the heavy set in there to try and stop it. Gordon got in the end zone. That was unfortunate. Okay, so on that play, then they had a 2-point conversion that followed. Well, there was some confusion over whether the Chargers were going to kick or play for a 2-point conversion, and the reason being that score was such that it would have made it 19-3, so a 16-point lead, which is typically the one you'd go for and not 17 to try and keep the other team from catching up. At least that's right. The way I would think of it. You like to put the other team in a position where not only do they have to get two touchdowns, but they also have to convert two-point conversions, and you'd rather have that than taking a chance on going up 17.
Right.
And I think there is room for debate on that, and I'd certainly be open to discussing it, but that would be how I'd see it happening. But anyway, the ball gets set. It either gets set at the 15-yard line and you kick, or it gets set at the 2-yard line and you make your play. So there's no excuse for not having either unit ready, get in the game, and then be ready to make a play to change that. So anyway, the Ravens had Board and Kennedy run off the field, who I believe Kennedy anyway would have been only on their kick defense team. So I don't know why he was late getting off the field. And then Board ran off the field, who had been there. He was a goal line linebacker who was in for Owosso. So I didn't really understand also why he would have been off late, but he might have been the guy who should have been in the game. If you look at the view from the sideline, it looks like Kenny Young was ready to go in the game but was confused about whether or not he should have been. And they were left him off, and then Levine obviously understood very quickly that something was wrong. He covered a slot receiver when that wasn't his job on the play, and then they got the coverage confused on the back end, so Mike Williams ends up being wide open in the corner of the end zone. They go up, 17 at that point. It certainly looks over at 20-3. But again, three times in four plays, they nearly had 10 men on the field. Just unbelievable that they would let it come to that.
Yeah, of course. As much as the defense is going well, and as much as this coaching by Wink is completely different and way more aggressive, to keep running into this issue is not acceptable and something they definitely got to figure out for next season. All right, let's look at some specific guys. And I want to start with Judon because he seemed to be in the backfield a bunch.
Oh, he had a huge game. So five quarterback hits in the game, and it was a mix of very interesting stuff. But they didn't block him a couple times when they tried to run a short pass to a running back. I mentioned this earlier. It was Eckler both times on consecutive plays. They let him rush unblocked and knock down Rivers. It's at the end of the first half. Each play went for 3 yards. I'm going to tell you that if I'm the offensive coordinator for San Diego, and that happens once, I'm not running that same play again with no blocker for Judon. I'm not going to let my quarterback get hit twice in a row like that. But for whatever reason, the San Diego coordinator thought, yeah, that's okay with me. I'll let him get hit for 3 more yards. He got 5 total quarterback hits in the game. He beat Okung to the inside. He stunted to the A-gap once. Just a set of outstanding things. He shed Okung once for a QH. That was the one where the ball popped up. And, you know, it was one of these things that, you know, when the Ravens weren't getting any interceptions early in the year, that would have been a ball we'd have complained about as being, hey, you know, why can't these balls ever drop into the Ravens' hands or them be positioned to do it? But anyway, great. 5 quarterback hits. Very rare that anybody gets to that kind of a total. He also tackled Benjamin for a loss of 1 on a 3rd-and-2 swing pass to the outside. And he shed Green to tackle Gordon on a run left for -2. It looked like that was kind of a bad spot for the Ravens. Like it could have been about -3.5 on that play, but it was what it was, and a very nice play by Judon. The only play that Judon didn't play well came on that crossover drive that set up the touchdown, and the Chargers' only touchdown late in the third quarter. The play was it set up the early fourth quarter touchdown. He lost track of the football and lost the left edge on a running play. He got spun around and he thought he was supposed to cover the fullback Watt, and Gordon was actually running the ball left with Watt leading, and ended up Gordon running for 14 yards down to about the 2-yard line, and that set up their touchdown. So unfortunate on that play, but he otherwise had an outstanding game. A couple neutral zone infractions that honestly they're going to happen. One of them was an awful call, by the way. The offense has to move for a neutral zone infraction to be called,
right.
And none of the offensive players moved their feet, and they just pointed. Well, that's not what you have to do. You have to show that you were drawn out of your stance for the neutral zone infraction to count. Judon was back on side. These guys were just pointing and stayed exactly right where their feet were, and the official threw the flag for some reason.
Because that's what I thought, that our defense in that chance like had a chance to pull back, to get back in position.
Yeah, they do, unless they pull an offensive player out of their stance. No, right. No offensive player was pulled out of his stance. So, anyway, you got it exactly right, and that was an unfortunate call. But that was one of 2 neutral zone infractions. The other one was one where Pouncey had a head bob and four guys jumped offside, and Judon happened to be one of them. But anyway, it was what it was. Great day for Judon. He's certainly in good position. The Ravens need to figure out, I think, if there is a bargain to be had among their four third-year veterans. So Judon's had three full years. Tavon Young's had three full years. Pierce has had three full years. Among those guys, they really need to look and see, is there a cornerstone player that we can identify, or is one of those three guys willing to play at a mild hometown discount to get their financial future solved at the end of 3 years that will make them a value as a cornerstone rather than making them play out their contract next year, potentially go through the franchise tagging process, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So Judon would be a good player to sign long-term at this point, and the Ravens have some money to do it, and they should look to be signing their own free agents if they have good players ahead of going out to the market where they – it will right lose in top four. Yeah, and losing the comp four.
Okay. Peanut seemed to have get in enough plays trying to force the announcers to keep saying his name.
There you go. So I can tell you're not going to say it. That's all smart.
I can try. It's no, I can't do it. The end throws me off. Oswosner.
There you go. Okay. So,
I can't do it.
Oh, that's okay.
Maybe if I didn't look at it.
Owosu seems to really have the number of the San Diego running backs. In this game, he rushed unblocked through the left B gap. Eckler missed the pickup, and that was an opportunity for him to get a sack minus six. He had a quarterback hit in the game. He had another pressure. He beat Pouncey for a four-yard tackle on Gordon. That was a really nice pressure. So just a bunch of positive things he did in the game. He of course got the football forced fumble, very much like the one on Gates 2 weeks ago. Green got the reception this time. Jefferson was hanging onto his ankle for dear life. Owosu came up a second man to the ball, punched it free from his right hand. It was so similar to the last play. It's not even funny. Yeah. That play should have turned the game around, but then of course the Ravens didn't really do anything with it.
Right. We needed Tavon Young on the field in that place to take it all the way back.
There you go. That's what I felt like at the time, was if Mosley didn't take it to the house, it was going to be trouble.
All right. All right, I want to talk about a couple old guys. So Eric Weddle seemed to play well, and then afterwards he said that he made comment about if the Ravens don't re-sign him, he'll probably retire. So how did Eric Weddle do?
So good game for Eric Weddle, not necessarily in coverage, although I like the fact that San Diego didn't get any long throws in the game, and Weddle certainly deserves part of the credit from that being a back-end guy. But Weddle's real contribution in this game, I thought, was in the fourth quarter in the run game. He had five stops for gains of two or less, and that includes the play we talked about, tripping up Gordon near the goal line, which set up fourth and one. But he made another wonderful play on, I believe it was the second down play, Q4 151, might have been the first down play, second down play, whichever it was, the last drive where they had to stop San Diego in order to get the ball back. First down ends the game. The right edge appeared entirely blocked up. And I mean, like, everyone on that edge, Jefferson and Judon and Wormley, all appeared like they were stuffed and the right edge was sealed. And somehow Weddle dove between Judon, who was being knocked over, and Wormley to take down the ball carrier. Just a remarkable play. You can't even see it on the broadcast video. So great play there, and that was one of the ones. I love the fact that he went out strong like that. Those contributions in the run game are a big part of what Eric Weddle's done. Of course, his time with the Ravens, mostly we think of him as a center fielder, although he's made some other decent plays in the pass rush game as well. But that was a really big contribution to the comeback that might have gone unnoticed to some people.
All right. And I want to talk a little bit about his future, but we'll get to that in the mailbag. Other old guy, I want to talk about Terrell Suggs. It seemed like he got pulled out or took himself out for a few plays kind of in the middle of the game.
Yeah,
third quarter.
Yeah, he missed a stretch of snaps, and I had the number in here. Like, he played only 12 of 25 snaps or something at one point. In any case, I've got it 12 of 28 competitive snaps after he got injured. This is a case where the Ravens really missed Tim Williams. They really needed another outside linebacker healthy, and frankly, another pass rusher healthy. And that brings up a question for the future: is can the Ravens afford to let Suggs go? He's not the pass rusher he used to be. Obviously, honestly, didn't have a great year as a pass rusher this year. Can they afford? Do they trust Tim Williams to get back in shape and be that guy now that he's a fourth year player next year? So that's really going to be a big question. And then the Ravens are going to need to decide what they've got very quickly with him. Very disappointing the way things have played out for Williams this year. Apparently unprepared and didn't keep up his training regimen while he was hurt. He's in Harbaugh's doghouse, or he would have been active some of these last few weeks because the Ravens really needed the additional pass rusher. But I think, you know, a lot of what happens to Suggs may be decided by, you know, how much they really trust Williams to come back and be the starting rush linebacker next year.
Gotcha. And final guy I wanted to ask about is C.J. Mosley, because he's, again, another guy they're going to have to make a decision about.
Yeah, I thought C.J. had another outstanding game. He's
so now that
looks
he's
like
healthy, he seems to be playing well.
You know, that's really what it is. I'm convinced he was playing hurt most of the year. You know, what he did the last few weeks to get the Ravens help, get the Ravens in the playoffs, he's been a very big part of that. And he had another good game here. The fumble recovery was obviously nice. He did other things in coverage, wasn't burned. And that's what we've generally seen recently, is that he hasn't been burned very often. He's been effective as a pass rusher, you know, getting in there and making things happen as a pass rusher, including the interception last week by Jimmy Smith that he tipped. So, you know, I'm excited about that. I think, you know, the Ravens ought to find a price that is good for him, and hopefully they can come to an agreement on what his contractual value is. I'd love to have him back if they can have him. If they don't, they're kind of in a difficult position because Weddle is likely gone, I think. When I hear a comment from Weddle like that, by the way, part of what I'm thinking is he's really saying he wants to be back at the salary next year, but his ambivalence is an indication that he doesn't want to play for a reduced salary. So another question will come up with Weddle is, would he be interested in coaching instead of
playing? Well, and you know what? Let's go straight into the mailbag now with that question from Alex, who gets in two forward-looking questions. What do you think the chances of the Ravens taking on Eric Weddle as a secondary coach?
You know, everything about Eric Weddle, if you watch him in camp, says he's a player coach already.
Right.
You know, and the way he's, you know, took over the Green Dot for a while this year, and you know, the way he is at camp, and everybody else watches from the sideline, and he watches from behind the play because he wants the safety's view of the play. You know, he's operating just at a different level and trying to understand not only how his own contributions work, but how it fits in with the rest of the scheme. I don't know exactly what kind of a X's and O's guy Weddle would be, but we saw in camp the one X's and O play that he drew up, and I forget who's the Nakua had the interception during the preseason, and the crowd just went crazy. Not the crowd, the other players just went crazy for Weddle. I think he's a very relatable character. You know, watching him in his initial discussions with Hayden Hurst when he came to, you know, ask him, is he married, and he said no, and he says, oh, it's all ball then, that's good, kind of thing. It's exactly the kind of probing mind you want, understanding the psyche of that young player and what sacrifices he has to make to stay in the ball, keep his head in football and whatnot. And, you know, I think he's a very relatable person in terms of that as a coach. So I'd be excited about the chance of it. I hope that he would want to, and he may want a larger role than he could otherwise expect. So he'd probably want to be secondary coach right away somewhere. Right. And then with the inside track on being defensive coordinator within a few years. So
Would you give him sign him as a player with the salary he's getting now, kind of with the knowledge that he's going to be an on-the-field coach and working with him of saying, hey, we might pull you out a little more and let the young guys go, but we're looking at you as an on-the-field coach? Or is that too much money?
I think you've got to make the cap decision based on whether or not he can really provide value as a player. If he comes back as a coach, first of all, that money's outside the cap, so you can pay him whatever you want to. But I think his salary gets cut to about $1 million a year or less if he's the secondary coach.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Harbaugh probably makes I don't know $5 million a year. I'm guessing, and then your coordinators may be in the $1 to $2 million range, and then your unit coaches are going to be less than that. So I can't imagine he would make over $1 million a year as a secondary coach, even though he's Eric Weddle.
Sure.
But at least it's off cap if you do that. And I think that's a reasonable solution. I don't think it's reasonable to pay him his fourth year salary, which is already inflated because of the way contracts work to escalate salaries through the period. So there's a value right. to cutting him in the last year. So I think probably that contract is just, it would have to be reduced if he was going to come back and play.
Okay. And then Alex also wants to know, have you given any thought or any chance the Ravens given any thought of reaching out to Michael Vick and bringing him in as a, he says offensive coach, but I would guess quarterback coach.
Yeah, I think that would make the most sense. Urban has a very good record with quarterbacks that are running quarterbacks. So I don't know. I don't know what role you have for Michael Vick. And something tells me Michael Vick is either would have to be either all in or all out on this kind of thing. And something right. tells me Michael Vick would kind of have very much conditional love for this kind of a coaching position. Okay, and you
well, I mean, what we do know about Michael Vick is that he loves Marty Mornhinweg. He's trying to get into coaching mm-hmm. with that flag football thing. And he has said that he talks to Marty for coaching advice.
I mean, it's the earmarks are there. If you keep Mornhinweg, maybe you can have Michael Vick, and maybe that makes sense for the organization. I just don't know what you do because I don't think you get rid of Urban. I think he's had too much success. So, but that doesn't mean you can't have a special assistant, the offensive coordinator, and it's Michael Vick. And if he's really serious about coaching, and I think that he more than Griffin even can make Jackson understand what's really necessary. I'll say this: there is no more overcoached player right now, probably in the entire NFL, than Jackson.
Yeah,
he has got every possible coaching avenue has been explored here to have Urban and Mornhinweg and had this run system and system completely built around him. I mean, it's a very good. Very good deal for him. If they were to go out and get Michael Vick to add to that, that would be quite a murderer's row. And Robert Griffin, as a backup.
Oh, yeah. And if you can keep RG3 around next year as a backup, that seems very fitting. And it'll be exciting to see as Lamar's stuff up and down. No matter what you think of Lamar, he went in mid-season when he wasn't projected to play this year. Mm-hmm. So to give him a full offseason, give him time in the weight room, give him time with all these coaches, let him learn the playbook, and next season should be fun for Lamar.
Yeah, he's a half year ahead of his projection. Development. Yeah.
All right. Small mailbag today because everyone's got questions about the offense that we'll get into on the next one. Minion Hunter wants to know, how would you describe garbage time, and does garbage time exist in the playoffs? So clearly this is about those final easily being able to say, well, Lamar got those points during garbage time, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, first of all, I wouldn't really devalue that. I think what they were finally able to do in those drives is play no huddle, which finally slowed down their pass rush a little bit. Now, they still were able to get in there and chase Lamar around, and Lamar, made a Mahomes-like play that will not be remembered anymore, but to throw the ball over Derwin James' head and drop it right on the money to Dixon for the long play.
Yep.
And that was we just timed the play today. It was over 9 seconds that he was scrambling around in that pocket on that play. So not in the pocket, but all over the field on that play before he threw the ball. What else did I want to say on this? The other thing, the escapes from in the pocket from additional sacks in this game to make runs, to throw the incomplete pass on the left sideline, which was unfortunate that wasn't complete after the fumble, but he probably avoided 3 sacks more in this game by escaping the pocket and running out of pressure. And that's something we noticed in scoring the offensive line, is that there's some offensive linemen who are going to have bad scores anyway that really would have had worse scores if they had not been bailed out a couple additional times by Lamar.
Gotcha. All right, so we'll get into that a lot deeper on the next episode, which is a great time to kind of lay out the upcoming schedule and the off season because this is the last week that we're going to recap a Ravens game.
Yeah. So, it's unfortunate, but we'll do that probably on Wednesday. We'll do the show on the offensive, on the offense. Could be as early as tomorrow, but it would be in the next 2 days. And be available no later than Thursday morning. We'll do a roster segmentation. So we typically like to do that three times per year, and that's dividing the roster into those five categories, talking through a lot about what the Ravens are planning going into this offseason. I think this is the most pertinent time to do it. Then we'll do it again in camp, and then we'll do it again during the regular season on the bye week like we did this last time. So,
right. Yep. So offense and defense roster segments will be next week. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep it rolling. And then that's when we'll sit back and kind of do the shows as they warrant based on the off-season schedule. If there's something that we need to talk about after Bisciotti does his State of the Ravens, we can do in a podcast. If there's a specific topic that you, the listener, wants us to delve more into, definitely send that in, because it's the off-season. We're going to have some space for this other stuff.
Yeah, one thing I'd toss out there, if you'd like to do a podcast on anything or on ideas other people have, one other thing I'd like to do this offseason again is have a show where other people talk about their own football research.
All right.
So if you've got an idea for football research.
If you play a lot of Madden and you want to break it down.
Yes. That guy was.
No, it was very interesting.
Very, very interesting. And I'll tell you what, he's a wild man, but it was fun the way he did it. He kept it tongue in cheek. I thought he did a good job. Dade had some very sharp stuff that he did in that. And Michael Crawford was on that show as well. Or who was the third guy? I think it was Michael.
Yeah. You got it.
So, a really good run. I hope we have more opportunity to do that because I love those shows. I love working with anybody who wants to get into a career in football analytics and try and come up with their own methodology for modeling stuff. Love that.
Right.
Acquisition analysis, we'll talk through analysis of major cuts and trades as they occur, post-draft analysis, then we'll get back into full swing with the camp in the preseason.
Right. Yep. So there we go. Nonstop. Well, a little bit. We don't have to do two. We won't be doing two to three a week. But we're still going to be regularly sending you new updates and podcasts to your podcast player. So make sure you're still subscribed and all that. Following on Twitter and everything. Ken, what's on over at Russell Street Report? I imagine you're busy this week.
Yeah, I've got a couple articles this week, a couple articles next week. But this week is the offense and defensive analysis from this game. I know a lot of people waiting for the offensive line scoring. There's something about offensive line scoring, they want the offensive line to have a terrible game so they can look and they can see just how bad James Hurst score, or whoever they're currently dogging, is. I can tell you it's quite bad this week.
Well, here's my offensive question. Is Sam from The Athletic that we had on last week says that the Chargers saw something in our offensive line movement to give it away. Did you see that as well when you were watching film? Have you found it?
It's always possible, and some of what Sam's basing on is the Chargers making that claim.
Yes, of course.
Yes, I mean I hope he would not do it otherwise. But there's a lot of people talking about tendencies that the Ravens have in the second time and whatnot. And
mental game just to mess with the other offensive line to say you saw something.
There you go. So if it's it is something. The Ravens have some pretty strong tendencies. One of the things that they've lived on this year so far is that they can run the same power play to the same side basically every time, but they always still have the option to run the ball the other way, sprint it with Lamar, right, with misdirection. So you have to still have both sides covered, and it may be a slight advantage to know you're really only defending against power on the right side and you're defending against Lamar on the left side. But what we saw again, in the Cleveland game in particular, it was Lamar running the ball up the middle a lot. So I think there's a lot of variation. I think the Ravens did a pretty good job of progressively adding things all year to make things just a little bit different. It's just the Chargers had, frankly, a revolutionary defensive approach, and we'll talk about that on the offensive podcast that stopped the Ravens in this game.
All right, that sounds good. For me, going over to Birdland Sports and check out the new episode of Section 336 that also came up today, and it is almost all Ravens talk. So a little different, but when you have a game like this and season ending, you got to get into Ravens, and we'll have plenty of time to talk Orioles after that.
There you go. Okay, so the Orioles, we get to get all excited about Orioles spring training next month.
Yeah. We've got about a month of no sports in Baltimore. Well, we do have the Blast. If you're into soccer, you can go check that out. And then we'll get to talk Orioles soon as well.
All right. Very good, Josh. Right, it's been a pleasure doing these with you this year. I look forward to the next one and continuing on.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.